ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
When you want to be stopped in your tracks.
I'm running to shoot it. It's 50-50. You can catch his gun or he shoot you.
When you want to know the truth.
She was brainwashing her from the start.
We're here to investigate.
Something's gone wrong. Big time.
Search Background Briefing Podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
The RBA's decision to leave rates on hold might have triggered a collective sigh of relief from Australia's mortgage holders, but there was a clear warning from the governor that the board stands ready to hike further if necessary. And after months of negotiation, media giant ARN, well, not such a giant anymore, has reached a settlement with its former radio star, Kyle Sandilands. Kyle gets a pretty nice multi-million dollar golden parachute, but could the deal mean he's soon a competitor with a company that helped make him a very wealthy man? Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Carrington Clark.
And I'm the ABC's chief business correspondent, Ian Verinder.
Ian, yesterday when I was talking to Michael, we're sitting here in the room in the ABC office in Ultimo. You were on your way down to the RBA, although you just got there in the nick of time, to hear straight from Michelle Bullock, the governor, about why the board had decided to keep rates on hold. I thought watching her press conference that it was pretty consistent with what the statement was, but she really was emphasising, including in an answer to you, that the fight against inflation remains the major battle that they think they need to fight, and they're not as concerned with that surprising increase in the unemployment rate that we recently saw.
Yeah, look, you know, the Reserve Bank is always on message. Philip Lowe was always on message.
Until he wasn't.
Well, he was on message. He was saying, it was very consistent, you know, with what he was saying, but he took consistency to an extreme level well beyond where it should have been. Interestingly, Michelle Bullock made reference to that yesterday where she said, you know, we didn't act fast enough when Russia invaded Ukraine and inflation started to really boil up, and we sat there and we watched it and we waited for the numbers to come through, and by that stage it was too late to act. And so that was a pretty, you know, insightful admission, I think, from her perspective. But what she's saying is clearly that, you know, inflation is still the major thing that they're focusing on. They're not yet looking at the effects of growth and a downturn in growth and what impact that might have on unemployment. But she said they're always mindful of unemployment. But to a certain extent, though, too, she's also jawboning. You know, she's not. If she came out and said, "Oh, look, you know, we've slayed the inflation dragon, so no need to worry about that anymore," that would be a pretty clear signal to everybody to write. We're going to get rate cuts pretty soon. Let's go out and spend. So it's the messaging that is, do not even think that we're taking our foot off the brakes at this stage, because we're not. And if inflation continues to become a problem, we'll have no hesitation in raising it. But it's the kind of language you do expect in a way when you don't really think you're going to be putting rates up again. Because, I mean, there are two weapons that you can use, only two, as the Reserve Bank governor. Now, they always say there's only one, and that's interest rates, the blunt tool. But there's also another weapon, and that's the jawbone. And you just, you know, you it's like the parent dealing with a sullen child, you know, it's the threat. Just wait till your father comes home, you know.
Yes.
So, you know, it's the message is loud and clear. Don't even think about starting to spend just yet.
Yeah, I always feel a bit sorry for Philip Lowe when it comes to how he's now remembered, because unfortunately, despite, you know, so much long distinguished service in the Reserve Bank, what people remember him for is that they feel he gave them a dud steer when it came to interest rates, that he indicated that he thought interest rates were going to be on hold. They wouldn't be raised anytime soon. Now, he actually put a lot of disclaimers around that statement, but he was more forthright than most comms advisors would have wanted him to be. But unfortunately, that is the thing that he is now remembered for. And I think the Reserve Bank has learnt a lesson from that. And unfortunately, it means that they're sometimes less willing to engage in predictions about where things are heading.
Yeah. But on that too, they didn't just, you know, it wasn't just talking about interest rates and the way, you know, the Reserve Bank makes decisions to put rates up or lower them. They actually put the Reserve Bank balance sheet on the line there because they went out and bought two-year government bonds in an attempt to basically muscle interest rates into that low position for a couple of years. And that's why he was fairly confidently saying that rates aren't going to rise. But unfortunately, you know, the Reserve Bank is just a player in a market, in a much bigger market than most people realize. Mm. And that if the market turns against you, even if you're the Reserve Bank, you know, you end up paying the price for that. And that's what happened with the RBA back then.
So the language that Michelle Bullock used yesterday, which was talking about how they are going to be guided by the data, I thought was interesting. She said, and you've referred to this, if you wait until you see it, it might be too late.
Yeah.
Now, that is interesting. And so she's saying they got it wrong the other time around because they think they were too slow to act in hiking the first time around. And then perhaps that was the lesson they'd had learnt last year, which is why we saw 3 rate cuts.
Yeah.
But actually, perhaps they did go too quickly on that particular occasion. So now it's this question of, When do you move? Do you wait until inflation is down into the target range, which according to the Reserve Bank forecast is not until mid-2028.
Mm.
It's a long time into the future. And obviously things can change, as we know, based on how much volatility there has been, particularly over the last year. Or do you think that they will act before that because they will be going based on what the trend shows them?
Look, I think if you look back to what happened last year with those 3 rate cuts, you know, let's put it into a bit of context here. Inflation had jumped to what was it, 7.8%
or 7.3%? Right. Almost hitting 8%. Yeah,
it was right up there, and we had 13 rate hikes, some of them double hikes, right? And then inflation dropped down to inside the target zone. And all of those rate hikes were still kept in place. Now, if you've got your foot on the brake to that extent, right, when inflation is really starting to come right off the boil, I think it'd be completely irresponsible not to cut rates in that situation. And so I don't think they did the wrong thing at all. There's been a lot of criticism of the Reserve Bank for, you know, they should never have cut rates. Well, I think they should have because, you know, the idea is to have a balance to make sure that the economy maintains growth.
Even though we then subsequently saw inflation rearing its ugly head at the end of last year, you don't think the Reserve Bank's actions with going with the 3 cuts made that situation worse? Should have they done 1 or should they waited longer? What do you think?
Possibly they could have waited a bit longer, you know, and maybe not the 3, maybe 2 and just sit there and wait and see. But, I mean, look, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? You know,
and
I mean,
it's not a precise science. They're doing the best thing they can. And, I mean, I think Michelle Bullock is doing a good job in these press conferences of trying to explain why it is that they're so hyper-focused on inflation and why they think it is the most damaging, one of the most damaging things that can happen to an economy, and that it actually does hurt the most vulnerable more than anyone else. And so that's why they're fixated. Even though obviously people who have mortgages think, why are you imposing this pain on us right when we're already facing higher prices? But they know how damaging this is historically. And so that's why they're trying to deal with it while not running the economy into a recession. And again, the question was asked of Michelle Bullock, is that basically a cost you're willing to wear? And she kind of skirted around it. She said, that's not our intention, but we need to, and she said other central banks around the world have done that. They've hiked rates so quickly that
New Zealand, are you listening?
Right, exactly. but she's saying, that's not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to adjust more incrementally so that we can hopefully have a situation where unemployment isn't rising too quickly, but inflation is coming under control. But that is difficult. And one of the things I thought was interesting, Lucy Ellis, who's the chief economist at Westpac, she's a former Reserve Bank assistant governor. She said at the moment that the Reserve Bank has a pretty pessimistic view of the Australian economy. They really don't think the economy can be growing at much more than 2% without hitting constraints, which cause inflation to rise. The last GDP numbers indicate that we're running slightly above that. And so that's one of the concerns.
On an annual basis.
On an annual basis. It's slowed down substantially.
And I think if you look at each of the quarter growth figures that's coming off, you know, on each quarter that annual growth is coming down. So and our quarterly growth was 0.3%, which is pretty dire, really. And if it wasn't for the huge amount of money being put into data centres, we would have been really underwater.
Absolutely. One of the things I thought she said that was interesting is that we have seen an impact in confidence, you know, not just because of the rate hikes, but also what's happening globally. But she said there hasn't been a material impact on spending or an investment. Now, as you say, most of that investment seems to be about data centers, which don't seem to be particularly sensitive to interest rates. And she points out that the three rate hikes the Reserve Bank has imposed haven't washed through completely through the economy.
Oh, no way.
And not even getting close.
I mean, if you look at your bank statement, right, if you've got a mortgage, you look at the last rate hike, your bank is probably only just scheduled to put it in a few weeks to come. So it hasn't even hit your, you know, hasn't even hit your wallet just yet. And the other one, look, it takes about a year for the full effect of an interest rate movement to wash right through the economy. So we've had two that have been imposed, another one that's about to hit now. So that three rate hikes on the hop is a pretty aggressive, you know, kind of maneuver to make. And it's really set a message out there. There is no way they could do it again yesterday. So that's why there was a, you know, such a, I guess, an overwhelming view that it was going to be kept on hold. But I think one of the other really interesting things in this is that central banks generally, and the Reserve Bank in particular, have been very careful to not jump from one extreme to the other, right? So to just be very careful and you kind of ratchet up the pain a little bit and then you take it off a little bit. I think that they're becoming a little more, well, open to the idea of making more adjustments more often. And right. that view that she's saying that, you know, we're not just going to look at the data that came in last month or 3 months ago to make a decision about what we do in the future. We're looking at things now and anticipating what might happen because we did make that mistake back in 2022. We're not going to do that again. And so, you know, we will be making adjustments in advance.
The governor was asked to buy into some political debates, including the fuel excise cut lapsing at the end of this month. It seemed pretty obvious to me, watching her from a distance, that she did not want to engage in that question at all. No. And kind of said, oh, there's lots of things at play. We don't have a particular view. And then, you know, that the Reserve Bank will kind of look through the noise of excise cuts. What was your take in the room? Do you think they do have a view on whether or not this excise cut should continue, or does it really not matter when it comes to their calculations?
Look, they've said in the past about power rebates, you know, all it does is kick the can down the road in terms of inflation. And there's also, you know, the idea that you're actually putting money into the economy or you're allowing money to go into the economy, which does improve spending. And I mean, you've only got to think, if petrol prices were much higher than they are now, we wouldn't be spending as much. So, and I think, you know, we're not getting that signal that's come that we should have been getting about, you know, a global energy crisis. I mean, you know, we've been blissfully driving around with prices even lower than they were before the crisis began. So, you know, I do think that people need to be reminded that there is a global energy crisis in place. There's a, you know, a resolution on the table, but we're a long way from having that resolved.
You point out that the Reserve Bank is just a relatively small player in a big global market. We have had some decisions made by other central banks over the last couple of weeks. The European Central Bank hiking rates last week, citing higher inflationary pressures. They said this isn't just preventative. They're actually seeing flow through from higher energy prices into other parts of the economy now. They're trying to also get ahead of it. And now Japan.
Japan that hasn't had an inflation problem for what, 30, 40 years or something. And so they've now got their highest rates in 30 years. They've risen it to the incredible level of 1%. Just imagine. But I mean, Japan had negative interest rates for decades. And, you know, everyone might think, oh, how good would that be? Well, it's not. It indicates serious problems in your economy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Japan has never really recovered from that property boom that they had in the late 80s, where, you know, a small slice of Tokyo was worth more than the entire state of California at one stage. And, you know, the recessions that followed afterwards and, you know, just the central bank intervention in buying up government bonds. I mean, they own most of the Japanese government bonds that are on issue. So, you know, it's been a terrible time for Japan and hopefully they're coming out of it.
Meanwhile, we've also got the Federal Reserve meeting in the United States. Kevin Warsh, the Donald Trump hand-picked successor to Jerome Powell, who will still be helping to decide what happens with interest rates. Now, we know Donald Trump time and time again went after Jerome Powell for not cutting interest rates, calling him too late, Powell. What do you
amongst
think?
Amongst many other names.
Amongst that's the most PG of those nicknames. What do you think Kevin Walsh will be trying to do now that he is in charge? And will he be willing to go up against Donald Trump's wishes if he does believe that they should be hiking interest rates?
It's a difficult question to answer because he does have a history on the US Federal Reserve as being a fairly, you know, solid policymaker. But clearly he's in the Trump camp, and it's not easy to go up against Donald Trump. I would imagine that in this first meeting that they'll probably hold steady. That's what the consensus view is. But what happens from now on, because we have seen gradually rising inflation throughout the US economy because of higher fuel prices. And the last number, the underlying number, I think was 4.2%, which is exactly where our underlying inflation is at the moment. So the pressure will be on for him to...
But importantly, they target a lower inflation rate than we do here. Ours is between 2 and 3%. They are targeting 2%.
Yeah, absolutely. But one interesting thing in all this decision-making too, I mean, one of the things that the US Federal Reserve does is that it actually names where people, how people have voted. Now, we've got, we've made a change where we have the numbers who voted, 6 to 4 or whatever. In the US, you actually put your name down as to how you voted and, you know, the dot points on where you think interest rates are going to be down the track. Now, Kevin Walsh has decided he ain't going to be part of that dot playing game. So nobody's going to know exactly how he's voting, but...
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Let's see how this plays out. I want to turn to some pretty big local media news. So there has been this long-running dispute with ARN Media and two of their formerly major stars, and that is Kyle Sandilands and Jackie O. Her actual name is Jackie Henderson. Jackie O is what she went by for her craft. Hmm. But for a long time, Kyle Sandilands and Jackie O dominated the airways in Sydney breakfast radio, FM radio, and they effectively turned around the fortunes of ARN's, one of ARN's stations here in Sydney, which got rebranded as Kiss FM. They then tried to take that product down to Melbourne because they needed to justify a huge contract, $100 million bucks each over 10 years. $10 million a year. I mean, these numbers are really mind-blowing. But ARN was facing for a long time pressure from different lobbyists about the way that this show was operating. They said that they were under advertising pressure. We know that generally the business has been under pressure. And then you had this very public falling out between Kyle Sandilands and Jackie O, where Jackie O said she couldn't work with him anymore. There's some dispute about exactly how this all played out, but effectively we had this legal action. Kyle Sandilands wanted to be paid out for the whole contract, more than $80 million. Jackie has her own legal action afoot with a similar complaint. They've done this deal. Kyle gets $12 million, basically $5 million a year for the next few years. But also on top of that $12 million, you get a $1.5 million for advertising for his new independent media enterprise. We're not sure exactly what that will look like. I mean, what's your first take on this situation? And we've seen a big share price bounce in ARN Media, so people seem to be pretty happy with the numbers, even though they're paying him a lot of money to not do much.
Well, the contract that the two of them wrote was really putting ARN underwater, and shareholders were clearly not happy with the way that contract was working. I mean, advertising has been tight across traditional media now for probably 5 to 10 years, or even longer, really, as you know, advertising shifts more online, and so it's been much harder for traditional media companies to actually make a living. To be able to pay two people that kind of money was just extraordinary. And, you know, it just didn't work in the end. And the other problem was the content. So, I mean, puerile humour, you know, real school kid toilet humour in lots of ways. And look, it generated a huge audience, particularly in Sydney. But ultimately, a lot of people found it quite offensive. And so there was a huge lobbying campaign from several groups that had advertisers really quite worried and thinking, well, do we really want to be associated with this kind of stuff? And so the advertisers started to pull the revenue. And once that started to happen, I think the writing was on the wall for this contract. It was clearly going, something was going to go wrong. And of course, this blow up between the two stars, Kyle Sandilands and Jackie Henderson, was all they needed. That was the trigger that was required to basically pull this to an end. Now, you know, the amount of money that that he's being paid is just extraordinary. $3 million by, you know, July this year, and then a little over $9 million in monthly installments for the next couple of years. So for doing what? Nothing really. Well, but there's also a little and then there's the $1.5 million in free advertising. But there is a bit of a pullback for ARN because he's obviously launching a podcast, which won't be as good as this one, obviously. They're going to get 20% of the revenue from that podcast.
Yes. What I did find surprising, though, was that there is a no compete clause locking him in, but it only is only in place until March 2027, which I would have thought, given that, you know, Jackie O and Kyle's show, they managed to take it from one FM station here in Sydney, pull it across to a new one, took their entire audience with them and completely changed the fortunes. Like, they, you know, they are draw cards. He and Kyle is a draw card in the radio space. Do you really want this man potentially a free agent, potentially able to go to one of your competitors? And also, given how cheap radio stations have become at the moment, surely there is an opportunity for somebody backing Kyle, he's pretty wealthy on his own, to actually buy some of that spectrum and potentially set him up as a competitor. I'm fascinated to see how this plays out. Yes, they've kind of got locked in this deal, it seems, for 3 years, but it does seem to allow him to go to a competitor sometime after March of next year, which could completely shift the balance in the Sydney market in particular.
Yeah, look, the shareholders were particularly upset about the whole Sandilands-Henderson contract, I think, to begin with. And then the way it played out at the end, I mean, you saw the annual meeting just a few months back and voted against the remuneration packages. Now, you know, what happens from here? Well, clearly the market seems to think this is a pretty good out for ARN today because right from the market opening, the shares were up around about 24%. And since now, I think climbed around about 30% today. So
we don't yet know whether or not Jackie Henderson is close to a deal as well. They are due to go back in court, ARN Media and Jackie O's team. Let's see whether or not she's going to come to similar terms. It did seem like perhaps Kyle had a clearer idea of what he wanted his next business venture to be. So maybe that made negotiations easier, but it'll be fascinating to see whether or not they're actually able to clear this matter off completely.
Well, it is interesting that they have taken this 19.9% revenue stream from his podcast. So clearly they've written a deal with him for an ongoing relationship. Now, whether that continues in some way, shape or form into other areas, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. And always great to grab your insights. That is it for this edition of ABC Business Daily. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. Make sure you're following us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. And a reminder that we've got a call out for questions. With tax time just around the corner, we're planning a special series of bonus episodes unpacking super, write-offs, property and shares, how they might affect you now and what's in store for the years ahead. So if there's something puzzling you as you get ready to file, you can drop us a line or a voice note at ABC Business Daily at abc.net.au. Catch you next time, Ian.
See ya.